Philip Kerr's Berlin noir novels featuring Bernie Gunther, a world-weary private eye in Nazi-era Germany, have won him an international following and numerous awards. Field Grey, the seventh installment in the series, follows Bernie's unusual career from the Third Reich's rise to power through the decade after the war. It's published by Putnam, and I'm very pleased to welcome Philip Kerr to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for asking me.
And you've resisted doing book tours, at least in this country, until now.
I don't know. Actually, I don't know if I've been resisting it. I just haven't been asked. So I'm delighted
to have been asked. Yeah. You're often compared to both Raymond Chandler and John le Carré, and this novel has an epigraph from Graham Greene, who also makes a brief appearance at the beginning of the story. So do you see these books as detective novels or spy novels?
I see them as kind of political novels, really. The books are dominated by politics, whether it's the politics of the late Weimar era, which was an era which was struggling to deal with both communists and Nazis, or whether it's the politics of the post-war period, trying to reconcile American efforts to sort of police Europe with Soviet attempts to sort of take over.
But it's also one of the big themes is having to choose sides or trying not to choose sides.
Trying not to. Well, I think that's how most people prefer to be. When it comes to extremism, most people are sort of thinking, well, I don't agree with either of them. I don't agree with the communists. I don't agree with the Nazis. And that's the dilemma of the principal character. He's really a social democrat who loves the Weimar Republic and has seen his country hijacked by a bunch of crooks.
Well, you were born in Scotland, now live in London. Why did you choose to write a detective series set in Germany during the Nazi era?
That's a very good question. Like a lot of Edinburgh writers, I sort of think I wanted to get away from Edinburgh, really, a bit like Robert Louis Stevenson. I mean, he went off to Samoa. You can't get much further than that.
And then there are other Edinburgh writers who find it a complete world and can't think of writing about anything else.
That's true.
Another famous detective series.
Famous, Ian Rankin, for one. I mean, I find, well, having grown up in Edinburgh and been to school there, it's quite a stifling sort of place I found. I had a very religious upbringing. So getting away from Edinburgh was one of the best things that ever happened to me. I can sort of breathe freely at night now and not worry about my conscience and God and
Did you begin with the idea of writing a noir series and then decide to set it in Nazi Germany, or was it the other way around?
No. What happened was I'd done a postgraduate degree in German legal philosophy, and that got me interested in the period of Nazism.
Somebody like Martin Heidegger is a perfect example of somebody who,
indeed,
we wonder. How could a smart man do
exactly?
Like
he's a kind of tragic case because he's a very great philosopher who was attracted by the Nazis, like a lot of other novelists, like Hesse, for instance, Hermann Hesse. But I mean, for me, I was just really interested in the phenomenon of Nazism and wanted to write about it really as a way of saying to myself, what would I have done and how would I have reacted? How would I have thought of my own life in the context of what was happening, and so all of the all of my effort was designed to try and answer answer that question. And actually, because I didn't really want to be a crime writer, if you like, I kind of backed into it. There was so little information that was available at that particular period of time that after a while it felt like I was a detective myself and trying to find out stuff. And it seemed to me that the idea of a detective as a kind of everyman figure was a perfect way of investigating really what I wanted to write about, which was, as I say, explaining the whole phenomenon of Nazism.
Kind of the idea behind a lot of American detective fiction from Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler. This guy's kind of like Philip Marlowe in Berlin.
He's a little bit. And actually, in the beginning, it tickled me to imagine that, I don't know if you know that. I mean, Raymond Chandler went to school in England. He went to an English public school called Dulwich. And I thought, well, instead of going back to LA and writing there, I mean, what would have happened if he'd gone to live in Berlin? And in the beginning, it was a little conceit I'd created for myself that to imagine the kind of character that Chandler would have created if he'd been living in Berlin.
You've also written standalone novels and a series for children. Was this the first? Was Bernie Gunther your first protagonist?
He was my first published book. I mean, I'd been writing many novels beforehand, I think I'd written five or six. I mean, like a lot of writers, I started very young. I started when I was 10. I knew I wanted to be a writer pretty much as soon as I was a fluent reader. And that's all I ever wanted to be. But my father, of course, had other ideas. He wanted me to be a lawyer and, you know, live, especially as he was from Edinburgh. He had ideas of me being a sort of bourgeois, respectable Edinburgh citizen.
Do you have a model for Bernie Gunther? He's a homicide detective in the Berlin police force before Hitler comes to power.
Mm. When you say a model, do you mean like, is there an actor I think of?
No, more like, did you wind up researching that particular world and thinking about some of the people that you read about?
Oh, yes. In the beginning, I was writing into a vacuum, and then gradually I sort of began to gather information about the police and what it was like to be a policeman, who the principal characters were, and how oddly you didn't even after the Nazis came to power, it wasn't impossible to be a Democrat and continue on in the police.
He wouldn't have had to have joined the party or leave the
police. No, indeed, there were people in. I mean, most famously, Heinrich Müller, who was the chief of the Gestapo, never joined the Nazi Party, and indeed, as a younger man in the 1920s, he'd been a member of the Communist Party. And after the war, there were a lot of people thought that he disappeared and went to work for the NKVD, the forerunner of the KGB. So it was interesting. You know, the politics was a minefield.
Well, it was very fluid. Hitler once said, I think, mm-hmm. That some of his strongest supporters will have been people who had been in the Communist Party
yes.
before.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember that quote, and it sort of inspired me in one way to sort of think, well, there must have been other people who thought the same, and principally in the context of my books.
Well, Bernie becomes a private investigator, I guess, as a way to avoid having to make those choices.
Yes.
But then he winds up being recruited to work for the SS.
Yes, well, he's brought back into the police by Heydrich, who's at that time the chief of police. Because Heydrich respects people who are good at their jobs, and for political expediency, he actually wants a real crime, solved quickly by someone who knows what they're doing, who's not just going to look for an obvious suspect and just stitch them up and frame them.
And Heydrich is a real character. You have a number of real people, Martin mm-hmm. Sandberger, for example. An earlier Gunther novel had Adolf Eichmann as a character.
Right.
There's also another character here. Meyer Lansky is in this book as well,
yeah.
because at some point Bernie winds up in Cuba. But you also have a man named Eric Mielke.
Yeah.
Was he a real person?
Oh, yes. Fascinating man. He was sort of a young communist firebrand who murdered two policemen in the early 1930s. By the sort of 1960s, he's one of the most, well, probably the second most powerful man in East Germany. He's the sort of boss of the Stasi. And his career fascinated me, and I wanted to use him as a character. I mean, the great thing about writing these books is that, I mean, Chandler talks about if you run out of ideas, you have a guy walk through the door with a gun in his hand. Well, in my case, I'm able to recruit the real characters from history to walk through the door, and they're often much more monstrous than any ones I could have invented myself.
My guest is Philip Kerr, whose latest Bernie Gunther novel is Field Gray. It is published by Putnam in the Marion Wood book imprint. The book starts off, it opens in 1954. Bernie has been living in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
But so you use flashbacks to get us back to the Nazi era.
Yes. And
but
also,
why there?
Well, prior to that, he'd been in Argentina. And it was where he gets kicked out of Argentina.
He went to Argentina with Eichmann, didn't he?
He does, yeah. I'd always wanted to write a book about, if you like, Nazi society in Buenos Aires during the 1950s. And gosh, there were a heck of a lot of them there. There were between 5,000 and 8,000 war criminals living quite openly in Argentina. And I just thought I had images of, wondering what kind of society did they have. And indeed, when I sort of started to research it, I discovered that you know, Eichmann had used to meet Mengele for a cup of coffee in this coffee bar in Buenos Aires, and I thought, what would they have talked about, and would they have liked each other? And
remembering then, the bad old days.
Yeah, and Eichmann was terribly jealous of Mengele. He thought Mengele, who'd been a junior officer to him, had a much better life in Argentina, and he was very jealous. Mengele had a lovely villa and a good job and plenty of money, and Eichmann was literally scratching a living as a little sort of smallholder.
Were Germans also in Cuba?
Yeah, there were. The Batista regime, they didn't care who they used. I mean, it was strongly rumored that one of their sort of principal police guys had been in the Gestapo. I think fascists all over the world sort of, you know, fall into each other's company and sit very comfortably.
Well, Perón in Argentina, yeah. Batista in Cuba.
But I like the small scaleness of the fascism in Cuba. I mean, it seems to us, you know, in retrospect, they were very nasty. But actually, well, you know, when you look at it, you've got to remember, I mean, Batista let Castro go, let Castro walk out of a prison. And you think, well, that's not a mistake that Hitler would have made. So his fascism seems kind of tame in comparison. And that was one of the things that sort of really interested me, was to contrast the two.
Bernie tries to leave Cuba because the Cuban government wants him to spy on Meyer Lansky. Mm. But then he's captured by the Americans as he's trying to reach Hispaniola. So wherever he goes, there's someone wanting him to inform on somebody.
I think once you're trapped in that kind of world, I mean, this is, again, something that Le Carre is a genius at writing about. Is that, you know, once you're involved in this secret world, the world of espionage and the world of fascism and spies and secret police, it's very difficult to get out of. Because, of course, people, once they've got something on you, they think they can use you for something else.
And then this gives you a chance to send them to Guantanamo.
Indeed, yes. Well, it was too good to ignore, you know, the idea of actually... I mean, back in the 50s, Guantanamo was just a kind of place. Well, it was a military base for the U.S. Navy. But, I mean, as far as prisoners were concerned, most of the people who got locked up were sort of drunken American sailors. And the idea of having Bernie sort of locked up as one of these guys was, with the, you know, the obvious comparison with today, was too tempting to ignore.
And then he comes to New York, and then he's in Landsberg prison in Germany to be interrogated as a possible war criminal. And he's put in the same cell that Hitler wrote Mein Kampf in.
Yes.
And that's not just a coincidence.
No. Well, the Americans who were in charge of Landsberg, they called it War Crimes Prison Number 1. They wanted to make a – they put him in there because they want to make a point. It's fascinating to look at Hitler's time in Landsberg because he was treated very well. I mean, he lived in Landsberg like a sort of guest rather than a prisoner. And indeed, from a writer's point of view, it was incredibly convenient because he managed to get 2 years to write his book, which is, you know, all writers like the idea of three meals a day and endless writing materials and no one to bother them. So
it was like a writer's retreat.
It kind of was, yeah.
Because going to Yaddo.
He didn't have to do any work. There were no distractions. Yeah, it was perfect.
And Bernie tells a lot of the story at the time that he's being interrogated in flashbacks. The flashback story moves from Berlin to Paris to the south of France to Russian POW camps and from 1931 to 1946. Was this an opportunity to fill in all the parts of Bernie's stories you'd only alluded to in previous books?
Kind of, yeah. And I also wanted to do a kind of – I wanted to sort of widen the scale. I mean, it would seem – wonderful to be able to actually deal with almost 23 years of history. I'm a great believer that a lot of stories are too neat in novels. You know, stories actually sometimes take years to resolve.
What's the significance of your title, Field Grey?
Field Grey refers to the uniform that the SS wore during the war. I mean, everybody always thinks of SS as being people wearing Hugo Boss black.
Hugo Boss was designing Nazi uniforms?
Yes, I'm afraid so. Himmler wanted something very smart, possibly in black, and the person he spoke to was Hugo Boss, who was a very successful German tailor. And he designed the one of the Forerunner uniforms, but the grey would have made you rather less of a target, because I mean something in a very bright black on a horizon would have been all too easy for a Russian sniper to shoot at. So they went to wearing this field grey, which was more or less as Bernie says in the book, it's the kind of uniform you can roll around in. On the ground and get dirty and no one really notices. So it's a very good metaphor.
Were you surprised to learn that Hugo Boss had designed them?
Not really, no.
Because I'd imagine in doing the research, you find things you say, I've got to include this in the book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, these are sort of like, it's like panning for gold. You know, you come across little nuggets like that and you think, oh, I've got to put that in. But I mean, it's not like Hugo Boss was the only one. I mean, you think, well, what's the difference between someone designing a Nazi uniform and someone supplying cars to the SS, which is, of course, what Mercedes-Benz did, and BMW made motorcycles, and Siemens and Krupps and all of these companies that are household names.
And Coco Chanel's collaborated in France, and we can go on.
Absolutely, yes, she did, yeah. And indeed, as did many others.
The first three novels in the series were published more than 20 years ago, around the time that the Berlin Wall was falling.
That's right.
I imagine that also played a role in your thinking about this.
When I finished book three, I thought, well, I've done three now. I should really do something else.
15 years before you returned to
Bernie. It was a long time, yeah. And I was kind of lucky to be given the opportunity to come back, because mostly, people write far too many or they kill off the character. And I hadn't done either of those things, so mainly due to the persuasions of my wife. So I've got her to thank for it, really.
So is he coming back? Again?
I've just finished another one, which is set in Prague in 1941, which is, if anyone's been to Prague, they'll know it's one of the most fascinating and untouched cities in Europe. It's a perfect little jewel of sort of medieval architecture.
Well, readers should know that this is an exciting story. At the same time, you'll learn an awful lot about people you might not have known about, like Eric Mielke, who is at the center of this book. The book called Field Gray, a Bernie Gunther novel written by Philip Kerr and published by Putnam. Thank you so much.